Please stand by.
That was the pre-recording music.
That's right. Operator?
Yes.
Is there anyone in the other room?
Yeah, there is someone else. The rooms are combined now.
Oh, they are? Okay. Apart from the members of the work group, who do we have online, please?
Jane Han.
Hi, Jane. And for those of you who may not know Jane, she is a representative of the Measure Developer. Jane, is there anyone else with you?
No, there isn't. We don't have any surgeon representation right now.
Okay. And we're pleased that you could join. The objective of the meeting is for the members of this work group to be able to take a look at the preliminary evaluation of the measures which they completed and talk about those to the extent that they would like to review any of the information in order to be comfortable and feel ready to go into the meeting on the 28th. In terms of preliminary information, there's really not anything else that I would want to add. I think the way in which you might want to approach it is to begin the discussion by those individuals who are identified as leading the discussion at the steering committee meeting. So if that sounds okay, we'll start that way. And Alexis, is there anything else that you would want us to pay attention to?
No, I think we're good to go.
Okay, so if you're comfortable in starting with looking at the preliminary ratings and going from the lead being the individual who will introduce the measure at the steering committee, we can start in the order of what you see on the rating sheet. So I'm not okay. So measure 120 is what you have on the sheet to start. Is that right? Yep, that's right. And the individual who will lead the discussion of 120 is?
Me, Peter Dillon.
Okay, Peter, so do you want to lead off?
All right. We'll have to figure out what the important pieces of information are that the group wishes to discuss as we go through this, and I'll be the guinea pig for our template. I think overall, to introduce this, those of you who have had a chance to take a look at it, it is a measure designed to look at the risk-adjusted operative mortality for aortic valve replacement. And the measure itself consists of mortality within the first 30 days in which the procedure was performed, or after if they are still in the hospital. It's certainly the initial considerations for consideration by NQF were met, and therefore it was then brought forward as a proposal. It is, again, in an overarching view, it is supported by the STS data bank, which has been in existence, I'm sure the representative on can tell us, but probably almost 20 years now. It certainly has extensive information on which to craft their risk-adjusted model and such. Do you want to go through each of the individual stages? Is that how, or each of the individual classifications?
You may want to do that and do it from the perspective of where there are differences in the ratings.
Okay. I have to look at the fine print on my screen for a minute then. I think that if we look at...
Can I ask a question? This is Nick Sears. Should we be looking at the WebEx screen, or do you want us to pull up this Excel spreadsheet?
You should be seeing the Excel spreadsheet on the screen, and that will be our guide as we go through the meeting.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
Sure.
But whoever's got control of the webinar, the spreadsheet, will be moving us up and down, for instance, correct?
I think you do it individually.
Can we? All right.
This is Jessica Weber. Just let me know if you need me to move more quickly as I control the web portion of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't control my web portion, but that's fine. Well, let's take a look and discuss then the first classification of importance to measure and report. Looking down, I think with Terry Rogers has marked off as partially meeting those requirements. I think most of us marked off as complete. So I will tell you, I felt that as we go down through 1A, it is well documented. The opportunity for improvement is certainly there based on the factors that go into measuring a mortality. And I thought the evidence to support it in 1C was there as well. Is Terry on the line?
Yeah, Terry is here. And I appreciate your calling on me. You'll find some consistency in my ratings throughout all of the segments. And it really boils down to an issue that may or may not be addressable. I have no quarrel with the fact that looking at risk-adjusted mortality is an appropriate and prudent thing to do. My issue has to do with whether we could actually ask for more. This is risk-adjusted mortality, as I understand it, from an overall hospital's population of patients. And I think it's possible with the data set that we have to do something more specific. And that is to look at the preoperative risk challenge for each individual patient. So you may have an average mortality, and yet people may be dying whose individual risk were actually quite low. And I think that's a subtlety that I think we could actually get out of this data and make it far more valuable. So whether that's even something we can or should be considering or not, I just wanted to raise the issue because I think it is a possibility, and if it's not appropriate, then you can change all of my P's to C's, although I think it's something that we might want to keep in the back of our mind.
My understanding is that it is already risk-adjusted based on their preoperative comorbidities.
Right. I understand that, but the problem is that it's all done as a group. It's not individual, so you actually don't know, looking at an individual patient who died, you don't know actually what your risk is.
I don't think that's true. I mean, I used to fill these out. I mean, it's pretty specific, and the questionnaire is per patient. So you do know by patient.
So, okay. So the question then becomes, in terms of what we're asking of the measure, clearly there's the ability to dive deeper into the information should a result prove to be out of bounds. The question is, what is our responsibility in setting these measures up for ensuring that that process takes place?
A question I have along those lines, because the 1501 or 1502, or maybe it's for the mitral valve, but like somehow mitral valves got sucked out into two very similar ones. So what I didn't understand fully was like the difference, and maybe I'm jumping the gun a little, but the difference between those, because one seemed to be looking at individual practitioners versus hospital.
Maybe we're out of turn here, but the mitral valve, one of them was repair, one was replacement, I think. That's
correct. That's correct. But, yeah,
we'll get there.
Yeah, I would argue we stay on this because I think, again, Terry raises a good point because on a number of instances, we're going to discuss whether there are deeper you know, should there be a deeper penetration in terms of looking at the data and what should be reported?
Well, the question is, do you think that, some databases like this or like I'm in the VA system, like NISQIP, pick up individual cases that, you know, threw off the statistics, if you will? So if your risk-adjusted mortality was supposed to be, you know, 1% and it's 3%, the question is, would that pick that up? And I'm not enough a statistician to know that.
Well, presumably, if your risk-adjusted mortality is within the normal range, but you have patients at low risk dying, you must concomitantly have patients at high risk not dying.
Yes.
Right. That's true, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help the people who are at low risk who died. All I'm saying is that I think that there's an opportunity, whether it's in this setting or not, I think there's an opportunity, because that's what we actually do. Coming from the state of Washington, we have a statewide program that actually uses a subset of STS data. And if you have a risk-adjusted mortality that is within, if you will, normal range, that can give you a sense of confidence and reward. But it doesn't actually. There's more data there. And there may be something you could learn by looking at the individual risk of the patients who actually died. Sure enough, the sicker patients may not be dying, but could it be that you're spending way too much attention on those and actually the people who have a lower risk are dying because you're not doing something? So I think there's an opportunity, whether it's appropriate to do that here or not, but I just wanted to bring it up, and that's what has sort of informed my partial so that we could actually have this conversation.
It's Melinda, if I may. In the measure, as we are looking at it, is asking for information about a percentage of patients who die to get a sense of a population within an institution for public reporting. What you've just spoken about sounds like information that an individual institution would want to and would be able to gain access to the information to understand that more thoroughly at a local level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, to me it does, Melinda. I think that's part of it. My only hope would be that if they look at their overall mortality and see that it's within range, if they move on and do something else without actually looking at individual cases and so forth. So I don't want to overplay the hand, but I did want to bring it up.
And I just for one more second, someone online said they were with VA?
Yes.
Okay. And so having been at VA also, my recollection is that whenever we got the reports similar to what this would be, we were able to take a look at that observed to expected ratio and then dive more deeply into the information by going to the coordinators to pull the data. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, at least in my VA, every death is reviewed anyway is an individual thing based on their predicted mortality by NISQIP, some of which I don't understand, like I'm a vascular surgeon, so like we had a guy who had an infected aortic graft who their predicted mortality was only 2%, which seemed a little low. But, you know, unless it prompts a review.
That seems a little low by me, too. I mean,
okay, so to go back, Terry, to your overall, it sounds like what you're looking for is information that's certainly available in the database, that is a more granular set of information than what this measure is designed to produce for public reporting.
Right, and it does raise the issue, and again, I'm a complete novice here, of what the role and expectation of the NQF is with respect to asking or expecting hospitals to do. How you know, where is the line drawn, where above which it's like, oh, that's asking for too much? And I don't know the answer. I'm don't know anything about that. So in part, the question is prompted as a novitiate here about what, how enthusiastic are we as members to be in terms of pursuing a level of threshold for hospitals? Oh, is it like, oh, this is enough, we don't need to ask for anything more? Or does the NQF prompt us to say, you know, you can push that boundary a little bit. You can actually adopt a posture that may be uncomfortable for some, but that's how we continue to improve. I don't know the answer to that question.
And I'm going to say a couple of things, and if this is not responsive, please say more. But what NQF from the time of a call for measures and the receipt of the measures is that it takes those measures as received with their specifications to a steering committee or to an expert group for their evaluation. So the panel or the steering committee is evaluating the measure based on the specifications provided by the developer or the measure steward. The steering committee can always ask for additional clarification, suggest what might be useful within the context of the measure, or what might be a good companion measure, or in the context of a full report of the measure endorsement, to say what hospitals or institutions might do to better understand their own data. The steering committee does not have a prerogative of changing a measure. They certainly may go back and ask that a measure developer consider recommendations they have for change, but and to do that within the context of the measure that is submitted. Does that?
Hey, is Jane there? Jane, you're from the STS?
Yes, I am.
So maybe you can tell us what you feel about these comments in terms of what your purpose for this measure was.
I actually am just the staff representative, and we were told that questions won't be directed towards us at this time, so I didn't have enough time to get our surgeon representative and our statisticians on the line here, so I'm not sure that I can offer much feedback, but I can definitely take your questions to them and work with NQF staff to come up with some responses by the February 28th meeting, if that would help.
So
we're having both surgeon representation in person as well as over the phone during that February 28th call.
Could I just make a comment? Because we've spent, I think, 20 minutes on the first topic, which is endorsing a mortality measure that has been previously approved. And this mortality measure is, in fact, not generally made public by the participating institutions within the STS anyway, because it's a relatively low-volume measure, and the odds of statistical significance because of the small sample size with this measure among hospitals is highly remote. So, you know, not to quibble with the process that we're in, but if we spend this much time endorsing a measure that's been validated and we're just revalidating it, and it's generally not publicly reported anyway, I don't see how we're going to get through this conference call.
Right. This is Terry, and I appreciate that. The answers that Melinda gave actually are quite helpful. So you won't hear from me again on this particular issue, but it was very helpful to know the structure and recognizing that our task is actually to approve or disapprove as it's written and not to fine-tune it. So I think that the 20 minutes, for my purposes, have been very helpful, and I think actually can save us time for the rest of the call.
Great.
Cool.
All right. Shall we move on then? It looks like if we then wish to expedite the discussions, given the previous points, if we look at 2, which relates to the scientific acceptability of measures, the only discordance a bit was on in 2D. Oh, we're jumping around here. Let's see. 2D and G. Which refers to exclusions and comparability of multiple data sources, which either I felt were not applicable or were not did not need to be addressed in the case of this. So, and there are others. Anybody else feel differently?
No.
Because otherwise, I felt that the qualifications were met.
I agree.
Okay. In terms of usability, number three, I'm looking to see where our differences are in, again, 3B, which relates to relation to other NQF measures, and again, whether it was not applicable or partially, I wasn't aware of other measures to link this to as I did some background research. The other ones that we're discussing seem to be are standalone enough so that I don't think there's an issue with this point as well.
Could I just make a comment on this one? The key thing about aortic valve replacement mortality is having a reasonably homogeneous patient group to look at. So the way in which it harmonizes, especially with aortic valve replacement and bypass surgery, and then aortic valve replacement that entails other surgery of the aortic root or replacement of the ascending aorta, those are very complex matters to try to tease apart. And I think the STS has worked pretty hard on trying to get this into a relatively homogeneous category. And I think that's probably the issue in terms of how this harmonizes with other outcome reports.
Right. And I thought that was the strength of not only this application, but the other measures as well in terms of trying to define the at-risk population and at-risk procedure. So any other discussion on point three? We can go to four, and again, I'm not sure that there are any major points of discrepancy here. Looks like nobody knocked out any one particular area. And so I think in summary, just to keep us moving along, that I think everyone agreed that the feasibilities were met and that to recommend this to go forward.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right. I'll turn it over to the next review.
And that's 121, Nick Sears.
Okay. I think the same discussion. Can you tell us what 121 was? Because I
mitral valve replacement.
Okay, I don't have the list in front of me. I think maybe did we get a list of it? Oh, I saw the agenda, isn't it? Okay, there you go. This was mitral valve replacement, operative mortality for replacement. So if we go down there, I think we're going to find the same discussion we just had, trying to look at the entire spreadsheet. And I don't see everybody. Peter, you had on 1D, I guess, you had a partial, but everybody else.
Yeah, I think I was again probably wrestling with the same thing that you brought up, at least as far as points were going in first part of our discussions about how to discuss, you know, whether it was partially met or completely met, and so I put partial there just to raise it as a point of discussion.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I having filled this out, this is an operative mortality strictly on mitral valve replacement. It was just like the AVR discussion we had. I think the SDS does a really good job at trying to isolate just that. And again, it's another low volume procedure for most hospitals. So, I think everybody, Terry, you had all P's, but I guess it goes back to the same discussion, correct?
Right. Yeah.
So I think in general, I think the consensus here is that we agree that this is a measure that needs to be watched and looked at.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned low volume twice. What do you perceive as the volume numbers here? You're talking to a pediatric surgeon who, you know, volume for me is one.
Yeah. Well, it's all relative, isn't it?
Yep.
If you look at most cardiology programs, obviously the predominant operation is bypass surgery, and valves usually represent about 10 to 15%, maybe 20% of the overall practice, and of the valves, probably 60, 70% are aortic and the rest are mitral. So some programs, you know, do 30 a year, some programs do 50 a year, unless you're a high volume place that specializes in mitral valve repair. So, you know, if you're talking about a program that's doing 30 a year, you know, to have confidence limits around a mortality rate of 5%, they're going to be broad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the FCS recognizes that, so.
All right,
so if we go over to 2, can we scroll over? There we go.
The only thing I would say about, and this is just a matter of, I guess, paperwork, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, them on 2D, they all say no exclusions, but yet in their verbiage in the analytical method, they do mention that people who did not, or facilities that did not report in both time periods were excluded. So you are excluding some data, and that's not mentioned in the exclusion paragraph. That's why I kept, and I didn't realize that actually until I had read the third one of these, and I caught it in one of their analytical methods.
Well, but then you could still say, though, that the exclusion criteria are still defined, correct? I mean,
I thought they were pretty good. I thought, you know, this pretty much tries to limit it to strictly a mitral valve procedure. So
what I'm saying is they actually excluded locations that did not report in both time periods.
Yeah, but that's a statistical.
I understand why, but they didn't put it in their exclusion paragraph as a justification for exclusions. I don't say that it's wrong. I'm just saying they didn't put it in there.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that and agree with you, but I think it's okay because I've sort of read those exclusions as pertaining to definition of the patient population for the variable, and then it was it's a statistical management issue as to whether ultimately what patients, whether they had the data or not, were included in the analysis.
Right.
And I did the same thing. That's exactly what I thought. Okay. Any other discussion on it? I think the general consensus, though, is most people feel it's fairly complete.
Yes.
Agreed.
All right. Move on to 3, I guess. Peter, I'm just taking your lead. You did such a good job.
Yep.
And here, again, there's Chris and Peter felt there was
I'm just pulling my notes up to see what I meant, why I...
Yeah. Can you scroll over a little bit so we can see the comments? Or can I do it? There you go. Data elements are already being collected by STS for an independent audit process as well structured 4D. So that's the 4. Oh, we're on 3, sorry.
3, that's right.
I'm partial with the harmonization, I think, was not completely understanding what harmonization was supposed to be in terms of, like, you want to have less, you know, harmonized measures together, so you're kind of looking at a more global picture, or it was more to make sure that there's not too much overlap.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I that whole issue of harmonization, I struggle with as I read through it. kept vacillating back and forth. I mean, I wasn't 100% sure who we were trying to harmonize with, you know. You know, if we're going to just use STS, we're going to use STS. If we're trying to get other databases in there, I guess, then you have a harmonization issue, correct?
Right, or even just harmonizing with whatever's available, currently followed within the NQF as well. So it was multiple levels that I thought it was a bit, you know, a bit difficult to wrestle with this one. And the same with 3C. I know why I put N there is just not to knock the variable itself, but to say that nothing was addressed within the additive value, and I wasn't quite sure how to answer this one and I didn't want to just check it off as not applicable in case we had a point of discussion about the importance of this variable or this outcome in the context of all of the ones that we're looking at.
Sometimes it does get the waters get a little muddy, but I think overall the intent here is pretty reasonable, and I think it's a pretty reasonable measure.
Right.
Okay.
I certainly agree, and as I said, my end there is not knocking the outcome here.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. I think overall it's a good thing to measure, and an important thing to measure, but I wasn't quite sure how to deal with the harmonization issue.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're all saying the same thing. We all struggled with the same issue, because I certainly did. And sometimes not knowing the intent of what the measure, what the people who wrote the measures are. And maybe we'll be able to ferret that out at the face-to-face meeting.
Yeah.
So I have a little input on that. This category is actually by far the highest risk category of the principal mortality measures in cardiac surgery. CABG surgery might have a 2% mortality. MVR CABG is typically around 15%. It's a pretty sick subset of the population. And so having it isolated from the rest of mitral valve replacement, I think, is a pretty important place to split looking at quality of care.
Well, I agree, but we're just talking about mitral valve replacement as a standalone, no CABG involved.
I thought we were talking about 122 at this point.
Oh, 121.
121.
I thought we'd moved on to the next one. Okay.
No, I haven't gotten quite there yet. We're just finishing up. So 3 is okay, and then 4, the feasibility, is that what 4 is?
Yes.
Yeah. And pretty much everybody thought they were complete or partial. Vivian, I think you're having you struggle with the same issues, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. But overall, I think we can all agree that mitral valve mortality is this is a reasonable measure.
I agree.
Okay. All right.
You did it. On to 122.
Yeah.
All right.
Who's leading that?
This is Terry. Risk-adjusted operative mortality, MV replacement, and CABG surgery. You guys were talking about numbers, whether it's important or not. In the state of Washington, nearly 3 years, we did 120 of those. Mortality rate over that time is about 7.5%. That's on a basis of almost 16,000 total interventional procedures, which, of course, includes PCIs in addition to surgeries. So, with that, let's go to number one, importance to measure report. I think I probably had, are we on that now? I took my eyes off the screen, so I assume we are on one.
Yeah.
Yeah, good, thanks. And looks, aside from me, oh no, Peter has a partial also under D. That's pretty good. Any comments on?
Yeah, I think I wanted to throw that in there because I was wrestling with the, this issue of looking at subpopulations.
Right.
And I guess maybe it even goes back to our first discussion that Terry raised in terms of how far to drive down the analysis here. So I was just concerned, does anybody perceive that that there's a risk of missing a population analysis here, particularly as we've said we're getting smaller in our in the number of cases that are getting done?
I don't think we're going to miss anything. I mean, when you look at all these measures, they pretty much cover the gamut of adult cardiac surgery here.
Right.
So, I mean, the only thing, let's see, yeah, you know, I don't, the one thing that I thought was that, you know, you could say is where the tube grafts and all that, but I think those were somebody else's charge.
Okay. I mean, I agree that this is an important, as I think was mentioned earlier, that this is an important outcome to measure and to keep as a defined population. I just worry that there'll be more, that there's important information related to groups here. And I threw this in, as I said, only as a point of discussion. Otherwise, I agree that it satisfies the points as we've been asked to judge it.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think the comment about if you look at all of the eight categories that we've been asked to look at, it's pretty hard to, on the surface, say, oh, no, you actually really shouldn't look at mortality. So I think we could sort of give it the global acceptance stamp. I think what we're talking about are the validity of looking at the subpopulations when you get down to small numbers. So I misspoke. I said that with 16,000 patients, indeed it is. Those are all surgical patients. That includes CABG. It does not include PCIs. So, you know, 120 patients out of nearly 16,000 is indeed a small number. But I think there is some value in looking at it and keeping in mind that we may get misled unless keep our eyes open.
And I think the cardiac surgeons would agree, too. I mean, you know, that's we've always been about measuring ourselves, you know. And
sure.
And you just try and work through the best methodologies you can find, you know. And I know you guys struggle with it in your specialties as well. And I think a lot of this, forgive me for saying it, is to allay public perception that we don't care about our patients, you know.
Agreed. I'm just jealous of the database and would love to get my hands on some substratification studies.
Yeah, well, someday.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so I think we're okay on one. I lost my screen. There it is. Two.
My concern, just the same.
Yeah, okay. So that looks okay. Three. Some NAs. I think we've talked about some of those concerns. I think they are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really sort of becomes repetitive after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Okay.
Yep.
And four. So I think we're okay on measure 0122 on to 123. And I think that's Christopher.
This is the same thing. This is mitral valve. I mean, this is aortic valve plus CABG. I mean,
right.
I don't know if Chris is on, but I think we're going to find the same issues here.
Right. Yeah, I think the only one of the categories that stands out is 24, which is completely different. It's just simply a measure of surgical volume.
Yeah, that's mine.
Well, so can we? I don't want to take over the call, but you want to just is one? Two, do we need to spend any time on 1, 2, 3? I think the discussion on surgical volume, Peter, since you got all the ends there, I think that's where we ought to spend our time talking about it.
I would agree. I think that the others are well constructed, and I think it looks like we've all agreed that they should be passed on.
Can we do that? Who's?
That's mine, Vivian. And I have to agree too. I have a problem with. I have a problem with this one.
Which one's that?
the 1-2-4, the one that I'm presenting on. That's
could I just make one comment on 1-2-3? I'm looking at our numbers, and perhaps it's the same. It stands out to me, and I'm not a cardiac surgeon, but these are the highest volume. Either AV replacement only or AV replacement CABG are the two highest non-CABG surgeries that are done in this state. Is that true elsewhere? So there,
yes,
may be something, there may be something about that that will help us in this variability of small numbers and so forth. So,
well, I get, the only reason there's the what happens concomitantly is, you know, it's hard to find just an isolated aortic valve to do. I mean,
right,
when you're operating on the heart, I mean, you usually end up finding coronary artery disease, so you do coronaries and the valve. And that's just the sort of the nature of the beast of the operation. Most patients who have aortic valve disease have concomitant coronary artery disease because it always develops at a, you know, at a later age. So it's unusual to see isolated valve problems.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, our numbers, we actually had 1,800 AV replacement only, and only 1,200 AV replacement with CABG over this nearly three-year period of time.
Yeah, I would say it's bimodal. That the bicuspid valves average age in the early 50s.
Yeah, right.
The majority of them don't have coronary disease. The senile calcific valves, AVR CABG average age at my place is 78. More than half of them have coronary disease.
Sure.
They're getting older, aren't they?
Got it. All right.
Thanks.
Okay. So for 124, if we want to skip to that, I don't know if you want to do one of the 1501s first, or we think that that's all going to be the same discussion again.
Yeah, I think so.
I do, too. I mean, and I think it's good that we make a difference between repair and replacement. So we talked about the replacement already. I think it's good to separate out the repair. One thing that's not in the repair group, I don't know, is maybe conversion from repair to replacement. I don't know if they track that. But I think that becomes another moot point. But I think 124 is where we need to spend the time.
I would agree.
We'll move right on down then to 124. And this is looking at surgical volume for CABG and valve alone and CABG plus valves as a quality marker. And I have to say right off the bat, I'm uncomfortable with that because I don't know, while there are studies that, you know, it's intuitive and there are studies that show that higher volume, if you have a higher volume hospital and higher volume providers, their patients tend to do better. That's not 100% true. And there was actually, and the STS actually points that out itself within their discussion of the various subsections here. And, you know, they implied that they were going to use volume outcome association to be a quality marker, but I'm not sure. It wasn't clear to me in what they said, and maybe I'm not understanding something. Other than it didn't really say that they were looking at mortality with this. It was just looking at volume, unless I'm not understanding their purpose here. And, you know, even within the Journal of Thoracic and Cardiovascular Surgery, there was a paper from Japan where they mentioned their low volume. They were actually looking at volume association, too, except that their highest volume would be considered low volume in this country, and they still had very good outcomes. So as an editorial pointed out, this shows that you can have still good outcomes with low volume, and that, you know, overall, we should be careful about using volume as in and of itself as a quality marker.
I would agree with you completely. I am very uncomfortable on, at least as I understood this reading as well, I mean, in that how this was going to be described as just a outcome, excuse me, just a volume marker. with no linkage to any of the outcomes for mortality. And even the deal, there was, I guess, in 2010 in the JTCS, there was just an article that came out and it said, except for internal thoracic artery use, care processes and morbidity rates were not associated with volume. And that was with coronary bypass procedures. So I worry that I have the same concerns that you do.
And here, the problem with the volume issue, and I can live with this measure because, you might have a surgeon that's doing 200 cases a year, but he does 50 at one hospital, 150 at another. I'm wondering, and this is what I thought it was okay, but, I did this for a living for years, but, I'm wondering if they're just worried about the ancillary care that goes with it. It's not the surgeon's expertise per se, but it's the ICU, the anesthesiologist, the other people that surround the heart surgeon to do a coronary bypass operation, and not recognizing early enough because the variability in staff that you may get. The Japanese study might have been doing all the cardiac cases for that whole region, whereas you have six hospitals in a town, and one hospital is doing 50 a year, and the other is doing 250 a year. The nursing expertise and the perfusion expertise may not be there, and that's where some of these studies I think have demonstrated that it's not so much the surgeon; it's the entire team approach.
I don't disagree with that, but the problem is that they don't seem to be comparing. They don't seem to be linking the volume to anything.
Yeah.
Validated as a quality marker. And that's the problem I have with this. I don't see in here, it is not clear to me that they're linking it to anything that is already known to be a quality marker. I mean, it doesn't even seem like they're linking it to mortality. They're just using volume as their quality marker.
Well, it's another measure. It's another quality indicator. I mean, I mean, we have to look at this in perspective of the entire gestalt, I think. You know, if this was a sole marker, then I would say it can't be used, but it's just another.
Well, that goes back to the issue of harmonization and how are we understanding harmonization. To me, to use this as a sole marker is not harmonizing. I mean, you are getting volumes in the other markers.
And processes, which is what you were just speaking to in terms of nursing staff and ICUs and such. And, you know, the other variables that we've talked about are measuring that. This pure volume, it seems to me this will be, if we think that there's some kind of process measure in here, then it's redundant to the other measures that we've just discussed.
And I certainly could be swayed with that argument. I understand your viewpoint very well.
And this is Eileen, and obviously you guys are all the experts, and I'm here as the voice of the purchaser. So I think having heard this discussion and all of the preceding comments from someone who would be looking at this without, you know, a lot of expertise, and just I think you could misconstrue if you just looked at outcomes or actually volume without the quality piece tied to it, because I think for just a person – if this is the direction we're moving to making this information more public for purchasers, it needs to kind of give the complete view.
And I'm glad you said that, because that was my concern, is if we are presenting to the public that volume is a quality marker, you know, I don't think that helps people, because, I mean, just even think of it from the perspective of somebody, you know, fresh out of their residency. Their volumes are not going to be high. That doesn't mean they're a bad surgeon.
So in Massachusetts, when the cardiac surgery DON was expanded a few years back, there was a volume threshold proposed for cardiac surgery programs. And because of the drop-off in CABG volume, a number of programs didn't meet those volume thresholds. But they met all the quality thresholds, and a decision was made to drop volume as a quality standard. I'm frankly surprised the STS wants to keep this one going. It doesn't really make much sense.
Well, is this the STS that wants to keep it going, or NQF?
I'm not sure, but it seems like, you know, if you can get to the volume simply by adding up the other procedures and you have outcomes associated with those, what relevance does the volume number have in that setting?
Yeah.
Can I ask a couple of things? One, the NQF desire is to continue to endorse measures that are meaningfully used within the healthcare industry, and to the second comment would be that oftentimes what we have seen is recommendations that volume measures be reported with mortality measures.
Right, but they, as been pointed out, that's part of all of the specific procedure that we're looking at already. So in context with what happens to those patients, you already have the numbers. The other a couple of questions. I assume that this is a standing quality measure in NQF, but it must have had a sponsor at one point in time. And I wonder about that.
The STS is the sponsor, which is what I really don't understand, because they pointed out themselves that volume is not a quality marker, and I'm not clear as to why they would want to continue to use this.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, is that if we leave it in and visible to the outside world, then it basically sends a message that the NQF believes it as a standalone measure has some validity. And I'm not sure that's a position that we could actually
endorse.
Right.
Yeah, so two things. One, you'll have the opportunity to ask the questions that you've just posed to the developer on the meeting on the 28th. There will be individuals there with whom you can have that discussion. And two, while it is currently an endorsed measure, the expectation of the committee is that you will evaluate it against all of the criteria and that you will make recommendations about whether endorsement should be continued based on all of the things you've discussed here, the information you get from the developer at the meeting, and all of your deliberations around that. So there's not a requirement that any particular outcome occur.
Right. The reason I wasn't confused as to what they really wanted to do here is because in 3A of their statements here, it sounds like they want to do some kind of composite measure. It seemed unrelated to using the volume measure. You know, in 3A, number 2, it says, currently being considered for NQF endorsement, the STS CABG composite score is a multidimensional performance measure comprised of 4 domains of the 11 individual metrics. Operative care, perioperative, et cetera, which sounds more reasonable, but the measure is just volume, so I'm not sure even how that fit in. That's why I was confused by reading through this.
If this is STS, can I actually just comment on that?
Yeah.
We were just providing an explanation of what we currently publicly report on, and the third paragraph in that section, we do state that at present STS does not support public reporting of volumes, as we believe risk-adjusted outcomes in our composite measure are superior performance metrics. As far as the questions that you raised today are concerned, I'm sure Dr. David Shaheen and Richard Prager will be able to address those questions for you during the February 28th meeting. This particular measure is a little interesting because it wasn't an STS measure when it was previously endorsed. It was a CMS measure, and we just kind of inherited it, and we were doing what we could with the time that we had. So I don't know what our surgeon representation will say about the measure. I'm sure they'll agree with you or disagree with you or whatever, but I just want to give you the history on that. It wasn't something that we had created from the get-go. So
you want to take blame for it.
Right, pretty much. So in 2004 and 2004 and again in 2007, it was a CMS measure. When it was up for measure maintenance, something happened with the stewardship, and so we just requested that all cardiac surgery measures were under our care, and CMS was in support of that. So this is one of those measures that kind of falls in that gray area. So I know that they are prepared to answer any of the questions you've raised today, and hoping that the February 28th meeting will provide more information for you. I just can't speak on their behalf because I'm just staff, and I don't really have that expertise, but I know that they'll have answers for you then.
So
David is one of my colleagues, and he's written papers refuting the volume outcomes relationship, so I think we can accurately predict what he'll say.
Right.
Well, then we can recommend as a group that we don't use this parameter.
I think they'll go along with that.
I think we're going to reckon as a group that we don't think this should be continue to be endorsed by the NQF.
Right.
Where's the CMS position at this point? Do we know?
Well, that's for NQF to worry about, correct?
Well, I'm just thinking that if STS kind of embraced this because they thought they maybe had to because of CMS, I wonder if CMS, it may not be important, but I wonder if they have changed in any way. But nonetheless, we could still recommend what we believe to be correct.
Well, I think the CMS responds to recommendations from NQF also.
Right.
I think if we as a group, and especially when we have a face-to-face with everybody, all agree that this is not a good quality measure, I think CMS would respond to that appropriately.
Okay. I just didn't know who trumped whom. Okay. That's great.
And NQF endorses measures for quality improvement and public reporting. NQF would not continue endorsement of a measure that was recommended only for quality improvement and not for public reporting. So that's just one of the basic criteria. And there is an opportunity, Jane, I'm just saying this so that you can have the discussion with STS to recommend withdrawing or retiring the measure and or talking about it within the context of a composite as different from a standalone.
So let me just ask you, Commandment, in a different way. Is it possible does the NQF ever believe it appropriate to support public reporting of something that they actually don't think is a quality measure? And let me explain why I asked the question this way. If I needed CABG surgery, and being in, although I'm not a cardiac surgeon, but being in the medical field, I would probably want to know the volume of not only the surgeon but the hospital, and that may be inappropriate and valueless, but that's the basis of the question.
There have been recommendations, again, going to the question of volume and quality, to report both volume and quality together, but that when there was not a quality measure available, it was acceptable to report volume alone. Now,
right.
That occurred a few years ago related to several measures. But again, as NQF continues to evolve and improve its approaches and its criteria, that can change.
Right. Okay. Well, I just showed up. It may not be.
But I have to say, I would go for both. I wouldn't just go for volume alone. I don't think you would either.
Right. Oh, no, I understand, but it is one of the questions I think all of us might ask if we actually needed that.
Right, but I think what we're saying is in the other measures, you do get volume because you have
yes.
a numerator and denominator.
Exactly.
So you get volume from your other quality measures. You're just not having volume alone. And
yes.
I have very big concerns putting out there to the public that volume alone should be a quality measure. I think that does not help the public at all.
Got it. I believe.
Oh, but to your point, look, I get called all the time by friends and relatives, well, what should I do, where should I go? And if they don't have anything else to hang their hats on, volume becomes the adjudicator. Well, how many cases do they do a year, you know?
Right. So there's a little inconsistency in what we're
saying. I'm not saying it's right. I think
right.
our discussion has really been it's really sort of been fun to listen to because, you know, there are excellent programs out there that don't do a lot of volume but have great statistics.
Right.
And I think that goes to what we were talking about before. It's all the other things that go into the program.
Right.
Even if you aren't doing a lot, if you have the nursing care and, you know, the good post-operative follow-up and the pre-op, getting the patient ready.
Or you have good patient selection.
Yeah.
Right.
You send out the high-risk stuff that you don't want to do at your place.
Well, that, but that shows a, you know, if you're a small volume place, you may not want to do the high risk stuff. So that shows an intelligent patient selection.
Exactly. I agree.
So, but well, we'll see what the big discussion is. But I do have very grave concerns of putting out there that volume is equal to quality.
Well, and as a group, then we should just decide that we're not going to endorse this measure.
Agreed.
That's the purpose of this call, isn't it?
Yeah, it's to get us ready for the face-to-face discussion.
Set the stage, right?
Yeah.
It might be worthwhile to, and this may not be possible in the context of the structure within which we work, but the theme that I hear is that it's not that volume isn't important, but it needs to be accompanied by a more comprehensive or thorough analysis of the setting. And that may be a message, a pretty powerful message that the NQF could get out in some fashion, whether it's in this way or not, I don't know, because that's what I hear. Yeah, volume is important, but not as a standalone.
Exactly.
And I would agree with that, again, from just kind of the regular consumer's point of view, that
right.
That can, it serves as a barometer maybe, but I think the emphasis should really be on the quality piece of it.
Right.
Well, we're not going to eliminate this outcome from discussion at the main meeting, correct? This is just to as we said, to set the stage, and we realize that this one's going to take some significant, or at least some in-depth discussion yet again, particularly with the representatives there.
Yeah.
I suspect this is on the volume issues on some other program, some other measures as well.
Yes, I think it is, as I look through some of the other ones, so...
Yeah.
It'll be lively.
So it's Melinda, if I heard you correctly, the group is comfortable that the themes across the measures for 1501 and 1502 are such that you feel that you've adequately covered those in your discussion. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Those two are kind of the same as the other ones. In general, we think they're good. There may be some, like, variations between us, but in general, we think they're good quality markers.
Okay, so is there anything else that you as a group would like to talk about with respect to the measures overall? And then we need to see if there's any one else online who has a comment.
If you, from the NQF point of view, can give us some kind of idea of what you view as harmonization. Several of us have said that we're not clear as to how we're supposed to do that as we're analyzing these quality measures.
Well, what NQF has said about measure harmonization is that it relates to standardization of specifications for similar measures on the same topic. So that's the way NQF has defined it. Is that useful?
Yes. In some senses, I guess it depends on what you consider similar. Yeah. From our discussion, it sounds like a mitral valve is very dissimilar from a mitral valve CABG, for instance.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd be comparing the two. I mean, do you have specific, categories for mitral valve CABG and mitral valve long.
Could I ask another question, Melinda?
Certainly.
So this relates to the sort of the fundamental tenets that the NQF measures are for quality improvement and for public reporting. What is going to be the NQF position on measures that are
NQF endorsed historically, but that are only publicly reported in a voluntary manner by a percentage of the institutions that participate. So the STS, my recollection is about 20% of the institutions publicly report. Does that mean that these measures will get endorsed, or will only the measures that are publicly reported universally get endorsed? I'm not sure I quite follow the train there.
Right, and that will be an important part of the discussion at the meeting in terms of what, because NQF does expect that endorsed measures will be publicly reported. So the extent to which public reporting is occurring, questions that you may ask of the developers and measure stewards about publicly reporting, and if they are not currently publicly reporting, what is their plan to do so and to what extent, and out of that make your recommendations for continued endorsement. Because in the end of it all, NQF's position really is a reflection of what the steering committees recommend and then what NQF members vote upon.
Well, not to sort of create a storm before the clouds arrive, but if you look at the STS measures and you look at the state reporting systems, I'm not aware of a single state, and I'm certainly not aware of the public reporting that the STS did with Consumer Reports this last year. Other than cabbage mortality and the cabbage composite, I don't think that any of these were publicly reported. Does that imply that we'll withdraw endorsement?
I don't think at this point in the discussion it implies anything other than it is a subject that does need to be discussed at the steering committee. For these and all the other measures.
Okay.
And then the steering committee will make recommendations. Anything else from the group? Is there anyone apart from the group and Jane Hahn that are online who wish to comment? Apparently not. Jane, is there anything else you wanted to say at this point?
No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to go over a few things in preparation for the meeting, if that's okay with everyone.
Yeah.
We'll have the agenda out quite soon. Alexis, you may want to give an update on when guidance and the agenda will go out.
It should definitely go out next week, and with that, we'll send along a private agenda. The one thing I wanted to point out, you should have received a logistics memo regarding your travel arrangements from Benita on Monday, February 7th. If you did not receive that email, please let me know. Please fax to her the lodging request form via fax. And make sure you send that in by next Friday.
Oh, originally she said by email, too. I had sent mine in by email.
Okay, that's fine.
And do we get our confirmation back for our hotel reservations? Because I haven't seen anything.
Yes, once we make the hotel reservations, we will send you the confirmation. And that'll come from her as well.
Anything else, Alexis?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So the draft agenda that we're working from right now indicates that this group of measures will be presented on the first day of the meeting, early afternoon. There will be 2 hours set aside for the discussion of this group of measures. And for each of the groups of measures, there will have been at the start of each day, an introduction to the measures by the measure developers. And because the measure developers are very clearly aware that you have all of the materials that they have submitted, what they will be doing is providing you just a very basic introduction with key things that they believe are important to note and for you to notice as you're going through the discussion. The individuals who are identified as the leads for each of the measures, and that's the way you've approached it today, will give an introduction to the measure in terms of identifying the measure number, the title of the measure, the brief description of it, and then give a brief summary of the ratings and the rationale for those ratings, highlight anything that is of particular concern or any differences, significant differences in the way in which the items were rated, and then open it for discussion by the group as a whole. Now, one of the things in listening to you today talk about it is it sounds very much like you might find it works well to talk about the measures in groups. And so I think the co-chairs will want to think about that as they listen to each of the work groups talk about their measures. And then on the day of the meeting, we have an executive session very first thing in the morning. Please come to that executive session on time so that there will be an opportunity for the co-chairs of the steering committee to talk about the way they see that day unfolding, including some of the things about how groups of measures might be presented. But regardless, what we would ask for each of the measures is that those basic things that I just mentioned be provided to the group as an introduction to the measure. Because what you will have on that day is about 2 hours, about the same time as we've set aside for this call, to discuss the measures in full and arrive at conclusions about each and every measure in terms of its meeting all of the criteria. You'll need to be very focused in your introductions and very tight in your discussions in the sense that you stay to the subject of the measure and the salient issues around the measure and move expeditiously from one to the other in whatever way it's determined best to do that. Any questions from anybody? The co-chairs of the committee really had the responsibility for managing the time, focusing people whenever there's a need to do so, summarizing and pulling out important things for further discussion. So overall, managing the day and helping the entire group arrive at decisions about the measures. If there are similar measures, similar NQF-endorsed measures, or competing measures, we'll have that information out to you in advance of the meeting, and there will be a need for discussion about harmonization and about how to address competing measures. The way in which that is approached, we will have some determination about within prior to the meeting, and we will have a discussion with the co-chairs about that in advance. The one thing for some of the information that you've mentioned today that you might want to go back and take a look at is the measure evaluation criteria that was included in the materials that came to you for the orientation call. It includes not only the criteria, but some notes about some of the criteria, and it includes information about additional things to be considered for measures that are undergoing maintenance. Any questions or comments?
Are we going to be responsible to present the same measures that we presented on this call then? Is that the plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Torchiana, anything?
No, I said this was an interesting experience for me as my maiden voyage in discussing the topics in this manner. And I think that the, you know, in my mind, my summary from today's call would be that we have a bunch of mortality measures in sort of isolated parts of heart surgery that are relatively well defined, that are imperfect in some ways, but are generally pretty sturdy measures as measures go in this world. And so it seems like we should probably be able to endorse them almost in a sweeping way, hopefully, unless there's particular things around, you know, the desire to drill down more that would kind of invoke a single discussion. Then the volume discussion, I think, will be a good one. And I guess from what your comment was earlier for what I raised, this issue around public reporting, do we expect to ask the STS that question to see what they will announce as intent, or is that an issue that happens offline or it happens at a later steering committee meeting? Where exactly will that one become aired?
That is a fair question to ask at the steering committee meeting, and that's one of the items in the criteria for maintenance measures to be evaluated. So absolutely discuss it at the steering committee.
So we will, and at what point in the agenda would that be discussed then?
It would be discussed within the context of each measure or within a group of measures. As you've talked about this, it sounds as though it is a question for the entire group, so it could be discussed within the entire group of measures.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd want to think that somehow or other the NQF would be working on a sort of a policy position on this question beyond the notion that simply a NQF-endorsed measure will be made public. This has to be almost a universal question with a lot of measures in that the reporting of it would potentially be heterogeneous depending on the source. And so some sort of policy guidance would seem like it would be in order, as opposed to trying to decide it, you know, measure by measure.
And I understand that, and because each of the measures are evaluated and endorsed individually, that's why I would say that it does fit within evaluation of the measures. And if, again, if you look back at the material that came with your orientation materials,
yeah,
you'll see item 3A2 and 3A3 speak to public reporting. So it is in the, it is within that stated criteria from NQF.
No, I understand that, but let's make up a measure. Maybe this isn't the time to. But if we made up a measure, let's say it was, you know, lacerations following childbirth, and the NQF endorsed it as a measure, the specialty societies think it's a good measure, but, you know, a third of the hospitals or a third of the states in the country are actually reporting it, and the other two-thirds are not, would we not validate a scientifically sound measure because the voluntary reporting of it hadn't spread universally across the country? That's the piece I don't get. How does the public reporting become compulsory based on the fact that the NQF has endorsed a measure?
Well, because the N2F is not an enforcement organization and the measures are voluntary consensus standards, the N2F cannot police that in that sense. That's not a satisfactory answer for you.
I think I've probably beaten this one down enough for today. Thank you.
No, but we will continue to pursue it, and we should.
Okay.
Anything else? So everybody feel pretty comfortable with where you're going into the steering committee with respect to your presentation of the measures and a bit about how the meeting will unfold at this point. We will get out to you a memo that includes much of the information we've discussed today as well as an agenda. If you've got any questions about either of those or any questions as you continue to think about this, you can send Alexis, me, an email message or give us a call.
What materials do we need to bring with us? Will all of this information be there and be presentable, and will there be a summary of our discussion points, much like the spreadsheet? Or do we need to bring all that with us?
Alexis, everybody got a flash drive with all of the materials.
No.
I'm sorry, Alexis, you need to talk about it.
No, I didn't get a flash drive either.
No, individuals did not get a flash drive. Only the ones who could not download zip files. So we just asked that each member of the committee bring their laptop and download all the information that has been sent to you via email. We will have a few flash drives there with all of the information on it, and we can upload that to your laptop. But we would ask that everyone bring their laptop and have the information there. But we will project the information on the screen.
And, Alexis, whenever you send out the memo and the agenda, will you also add in the email message all of the materials they should have available for the meeting that's been sent to them?
Yes, I can do that. I'm just a little worried about, because the files are so big, if they'll go through.
No, I'm not asking that you resend them, but rather identify which files and when you did send them so they will be able to pull them down.
Okay.
Does that sound okay to you, to the group?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, is in terms of a summary of the meeting, there will be a summary of the meeting. It will be put into the form of a report that will speak to some of the things broadly that the group wants to have a focus on, and it will identify and discuss each of the measures that are being recommended for continued or first-time endorsement, and any of the measures that are not recommended for endorsement with a rationale. So that report that goes out for member and public comment becomes a summary of the meeting. And we will have a minute-type summary of the meeting. Unless anybody's got anything else, I think we've got everything covered.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Good meeting, and look forward to seeing you all in Washington in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.